It's time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt here in the house with us. What have you got for us this week, Bruce?
Well, I thought originally I would do one thing, and now I'm going to do two. But originally what I thought was if we can't have baseball, we could at least have some baseball poetry to make us think
there you go.
Baseball was coming. These are all from different editions of Athlon, the Journal of Sport Literature. One or two of these I may have read before, but I thought they were good for this time of the year when we should be thinking about spring training. This is called Hit 'Em Where They Ain't by Henry Stimson. It's what we call a list poem. About pungent nicknames, the old masters of the diamond were never off base. Daffy, Dizzy, Ducky, Muscles, Yogi, Boog, Specs, Pops, Babe, the Bambino, the Sultan of Swat, the Caliph of Clout, No Neck, the Georgia Peach, Stan the Man, Jolton Joe, the Yankee Clipper, the Splendid Splinter, the Thumper, the Kid, Three Fingers Brown, the Commerce Comet, the Mick, Hammer and Hank, the Hebrew Hammer, Columbia Lou, the Iron Horse, the Flying Hawaiian, the Golden Greek, Double No Hit, Bonehead, Whitey, Rapid Robert, Charlie Hustle, Big Train, Big Poppy, the Big Unit, the Rocket, the Chairman of the Board, the Scooter, the Wizard of Oz, the Mad Hungarian, the Bird, the Monster, the Human Rain Delay, Big Poison, Little Poison, Oil Can, Dr. Strangelove, Donnie Baseball, Teddy Ballgame, iChart, Shoeless Joe, Peerless Leader, Death to Flying Things, Hit 'Em Where They Ain't, Say Hey.
Mm. Wow. That's great.
That was a really good poem. This one I think I did read before, but I like this. It's called A Commemoration, and the subtitle is Ebbets Field by Matthew Johnson. The working class of the blue-collar borough used to step the creaky wood of the walkway stairs and shuffle politely through the narrow aisles to sit atop one another. The polo grounds in Yankee Stadium were too garnished and debutante to be comfortable for the working stiff labor. The technicolor outfield of Ebbets Field, plastered with ads for boot polish and razors, looked juvenile by comparison to the Puritan bare outfield walls of the Dodgers' crosstown rivals. To enter and view the black, Italian, and Jewish ballplayers of the Boys of Summer, untouchables to Anglo-America, one was required to enter a rotunda of Renaissance marble. It was as if the average Joes of Brooklyn put all their effort for its guests and communities to make the most beautiful welcome mat.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, I unfortunately never got to Ebbets Field. It was certainly there when I was young enough to have gone, but we were Yankee fans, so we went to Yankee Stadium. This is called Just Enough by a poet named Ron McFarlane, and I read some of his other stuff before, but not this one. My first baseball bat was a softball bat, thick-handled, the brand, if it ever had been recognizable, reduced to nothing, a blur. It doubled as ordnance aboard pirate ships, as field mortars on fortresses built for any war. With neighbor kids and cousins, we could field just enough humans, girls included, to play workup. Otherwise, with only my brother Tom, we'd be reduced to Indian ball, where the hitter picks up the orb and swats at whatever, then drops the bat where he stands, and the fielder tosses the ball, and if he gets lucky enough to hit the bat, he can hit for as long as it takes, which for my 2 years younger brother meant till he got bored, which was always too soon. We used to call that hit the bat. I didn't ever heard it called Indian ball before, and I'm guessing it would probably be better if we didn't call it by that name, but I used to love that. You hit it, and you just stand there and wait, and they throw it or roll it and try and hit the bat. I can remember one time I figured out that if I put the bat in a certain place in the lawn, the ball would always almost bounce over it. My brother did not like that at all. This is called Little League. Spring in the cruel month, the cruelest month. In our flannels, we opened the Little League season with a parade led from the church by Father Ott and two altar boys bearing processional crosses across Latimer Bridge spanning Silver Lake through no lake but a drive-in movie and Dairy Queen. We march all the way to Paulson Field and eat lasagna at the North Italian Club. Nick Rigorcimento gives a speech. Scarlet Sons of Columbus sash splashed over his belly. Broiled from the long walk, then oozing ricotta, a few kids throw up in the alley. Victor Valdi's tongue anneals to a fudgesicle. Frantic it will stick there forever like a curse. And East Liberty coined for him a mythic name, Vittorio the Tongue, Victor Fudgesicle. and he'll become the nightmare scourge of children, like the Mastro Spaculuccio, he dreams, until Frankie D. tears the fudgesicle from his tongue, brandishing it like a fetish, up on the top layer of Vic's tongue in pink relief, daffodil sway in the April outfield. That's by Joe Bethanti, former North Carolina poet laureate, who we've had on to talk both about his book, East Liberty, and poems. This is another one of Joe's poems. This is one of those that, as a Yankee fan, I told him I admire the poem, but the hurt is still there. And the hurt is still there 62 years almost later. October 13, 1960. By grace alone, among us is Bill Mazeroski, Polish Catholic son of an Appalachian coal miner. In the 1960 World Series against the Yankees, he struck for the Pittsburgh Pirates, the miraculous home run foretold in sacred writ. Yogi Berra, one day to become a band, documented its departure. The 1950s trailing off into Schenley Park, the number 8 on Berra's back, kaleidoscoping across the pinstripes of his gray flannels, modernism ended. As Maz completed his revolution, fanatics left the stands to await him at home plate. By the time he lifted his hard hat to signal it had indeed transpired, we'd all been resurrected. Everything had changed. That very evening, John Kennedy, debating Nixon, said, "The fate of the world and the future of the human race is involved in preventing a nuclear war. Everyone in our Latimer Avenue parish, Saints Peter and Paul, including infants, were on the right track with jack buttons." 6 days later, Martin Luther King was arrested after a lunch counter sit-in at Rich's department store in Atlanta. Kennedy phoned Coretta King. October 13th was a big day. In Joe's life. I'm going to read one more baseball poem, then we're going to switch to sports and poetry and Ukraine. This is called Afro Seattleite Fragment Number 8, Ken Griffey Jr. or The Sweetest Swing. It was never really level, more of a tilt, like the cap on your head. Pegged as disrespect to the sport, back elbow bent perfectly, you danced. Not with your legs, of course, front knee locked, back foot floating, but your hips played lead to your shoulders, better than tango, better than the waltz, better than the foxtrot, hips gyrating so fluidly MJ would have been jealous, a moment categorized only as sweet. Forget the outfield acrobatics, limbs swimming through stagnant kingdom air brought to life only when the ball disappeared from view and reappeared in your glove. One motion, your definition, fluidity focused into your shoulders and your hips. You rotated with black hole at your center, pure energy when your bat met the ball. That swing was confirmation to a kid in the South End that baseball was his too, because baseball was you, ball obeying your black hole, your dark skin. So dance, Junior. Let hips and shoulders share one last twirl at home plate, one last exhibition. So sweet, I'll have to say goodbye, baseball. That's by Malcolm Friend, and I really like that. I sent a message this morning to my friend Savinia Orlovsky, who is, to my way of thinking, one of America's most gifted poets. She is of Ukrainian descent. She speaks Ukrainian. She has translated a great deal of Ukrainian poetry. And I asked her for something that might be fitting for right now, and she said, "Well, why don't you keep the sports thing going?" And she mentioned one of her poems, which I should never have forgotten, which I'm going to read in a minute. One of my favorite Emily Dickinson poems, and it's a favorite of many people, it's short, like I Taste a Liquor Never Brewed or some others, is Hope is the Thing with Feathers. And every year at the Emily Dickinson reading, at least 5 undergraduates want to read this poem. It's very short, and the metaphor is that hope is like a bird inside all of us. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words, and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could have bashed the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it ask a crumb of me. Now, if you think of the 1994 Lillehammer Olympics, we cannot get past the fact that that is the Nancy Kerrigan anointed, she's going to win the gold, the whole Tonya Harding incident. It's the first time the Olympics have been held only 2 years after the previous Olympics, so they would stagger the Summer and Winter Olympics. And Lillehammer was a great Olympics. It was incredibly well run. It was well done. If you ask 99 out of 100 people, unless they're real Winter Olympics fans, and ask them who won the gold medal, they don't remember. I do, because it was a very young Ukrainian girl, 15 years old, and passed the dope test. And Zavinia reminded me of that, and she reminded me of the fact that Valieva probably had no idea that she had been given medicine that was not going to work. But there was something about what happened when the winner was announced, about the medal ceremony, that Zavinia changed into a poem. And this poem is called "How Was the Thing with Pink Hope Was the Thing with Pink Feathers," Oksana Bayul, who was the gold medalist and who really struggled. She moved to Connecticut. She was a professional coach. She had some substance issues. Apparently has done well. This poem has a lot of repeated lines in it, and they're repeated for effect. Hope was the thing with pink feathers circling Olympic ice. Despite her tender years, a woman of great composure. Circling Olympic ice for gold, Ukraine, we could hardly believe our ears. The woman of great composure, triple, Lutz, flip, loop, world premiere. Ukraine, representing the one orphaned and lost, a dash of Broadway thrown in for good cheer. How much could one girl cost? Kerrigan, Steely, no fame fetters yet or fear. A little Broadway never heard a routine, then gold. Oksana cried and cried and cried. Kerrigan gauged her steely dream. It's taken 20 minutes for officials to find. Oksana cried and cried and cried. Let's say triple cried. Post-Soviet tears no longer held to ransom. It took 20 minutes for Olympic officials to find Ukraine's national anthem. As Nancy Kerrigan's eyes demanded ransom, her Vera Wang swan about to be pronounced dead. Still, no copy of Ukraine's national anthem. Maybe they'd play Russia's instead. No flowers, swans, or poppies red at home. We held our breath. Maybe they'd fly Russia's eagle instead. But damn, this gold was our destined wealth. At home, we waited, held our breath. Where was our anthem, the homeland tether? Slava Boha. This could be our wealth. Our hope was a thing with pink feathers. Mm. Now, I got to thinking about that, and I got to think about a lot of the poems in this particular book of Zavinia's, and that's spelled D-Z-V-I-N-I-A, Orlowski, O-R-L-O-W-S-K-Y. It's called Bad Harvest. It's a picture from Ukraine. And a lot of the poems are about growing up with parents who were still very close to Ukraine. She sent me one more poem. And this one's tough to read. It's called February. And it isn't really about sports, but it is about what happens when a country becomes independent in 1991 and people just wait in another country to take it back over. 1990, Germany was reunified. In 91, Ukraine got its reacquired its independence. It had been an independent nation. This is by, and I don't know if I'll say the name exactly correct, Natalka Bilotserkovits, I think. It's translated from the Ukrainian by Ali Kinsella and Zavinia. It's the last month of a long winter. We'll survive. After all, we were at fault for something. From the darkness, a knife emerges like the moon. A guitar strums about corpses and forests while our voices endure on cassettes. Some owe less, others more. Some more, others less. Out of our hands, years crawl like worms. Yet there's punishment for everything. Unfortunate earth of enslaved dreams, of nasty words, decapitations of skin burned with acid. Your nightingale tongue ripped out in only Russian curses. A whistle, a drunken cry heard from under imperial robes. My princess, wife of fish and frogs, your every son a scoundrel or a slave. Whom to give oneself to and whom to love? On the banks of the eternal river, accountants, majors, their wives, their children, send off to foreign schools. What will grow from the scattered grain we had to see the naked field? Though some will get to see the harvest, the sickle will go the way of the foe. They'll beat with flails on the threshing floor. On an embroidered cloth, our bread will lie like a severed head. You know, I have a lot of, over my life, had some very dear Ukrainian friends, Peter Shushko, Zavinia, who I just adore as a poet. My friend Walter Klebowitz, whose father looked a lot like Lech Wałęsa. Walter just retired as a judge in Connecticut. His dad had this huge mustache. He was a big guy. He worked, if I recall correctly, for Stanley Works in New Britain for years, having immigrated right after World War II. And I said to Walter, well, what are you, Polish, Ukrainian, or Russian? You speak all, he learned all three languages, Walter, a very, very smart guy. He said, my father comes from the place where those three countries meet. Sometimes it was Poland, sometimes it was Russia, sometimes it was Ukraine. And I remember his father saying to me, there are just lines on maps. They are just lines on maps.
There you go.
There you go.
All right. Thank you, Bruce.
My pleasure.